We have in attendance Senator Donnelly, Senator Zaroff, Senator Lehman, and Senator Miller. The first item we're going to take up today is Senate Bill 215. We have a number of amendments that we will try to deal with this morning or this early afternoon here and dispatch with it one way or the other. The first thing is, I believe in everybody's packet there is a proposed committee substitute, 215 resources. It's the U version. There were some things that had come up, and I believe that they're all highlighted, the things that had come up in that, in what was taken out of the O version from the U version.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, do we have a spare bill packet?
Sure, we can get you a spare bill.
Mr. Chairman, could I just ask staff again? I want my files to be here because it's tough. You know, I don't always get to go back to my office, and sometimes I get delivered to the office. I don't want them delivered there.
Sure, I'm sure we can probably arrange for that to have it.
I'm sorry.
No problem. I'm that way too, Senator. I like to have the packet there at the table when I get there.
This is a. Oh, what's this here? Is that with the section?
No, that's the number here.
Oh.
See, I think David's
official legal services number, amendment 0.7, 0.6.
Do we have one?
This one didn't have it. It was drafted by legal services, so it doesn't have a number.
I know you wanted them out here, but that one was delivered to your office last month before we started bringing it to the meeting.
What do we have, just a U copy?
This is the version for.
Okay, great. Thank you.
That'd be nice. 215.
We're just going to go through the version, and I'm going to allow. You're the only person I'm going to look at.
Let's see what we got here.
Because we've already done all the public testimony, but since I had told you that you could do it.
4.7.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a copy of the U draft. Now, is that the right one?
Yes, the U draft is the right one.
Those are Al's.
These first four here are Al's.
Okay, bring us back to order here. There are a couple of changes that was done from the U draft versus the O draft. The first change is on page one. We dropped the title. The section says amending an element of the determination of the gross value of oil for purpose of calculation of the severance tax and its surcharge. That was dropped out of the title. The next item that was dropped out of the title is on page 4, subsection 4, beginning on line 16, and subsection 2 and 3 on lines 25 and 27. On page 5, the difference is that on lines 4 and 14, instead of difference determination, it's sum reported. And then on page 7, section 10 was dropped completely because that wasn't needed. And then the last couple of things is on page 19, on section 32, we added the sentence that the surcharge is not levied if the governor vetoes or reduces appropriation. And then on section 34, page 20, section 34 is deleted because it was the drafter just didn't make any sense. It wasn't needed. And the only other item that was added into section or into U was section 17, page 14. We added in the section dealing with Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and section 34, which says that section 17 takes effect with the effective date of passage of Senate Bill 33. So that is basically what we have. I need a motion to adopt the U version. Senator Lehman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt CS for Senate Bill 215 resources, the HLS 1107/U 22194 version for purposes of committee discussion.
Thank you. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. We have concluded public testimony on 215. However, Representative Navarre was asked if he could testify. He was signed up last week. However, we ran out of time, and he had other committee meetings to go to on the House side, and I told Representative Navarre that, as a courtesy, that since he was here, that I would extend the public testimony period a little bit longer to to Representative Navarre. Thank you, Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Mike Navarre. I represent District 9 in the Alaska Legislature. I wanted to talk a little bit about the history of the 470 Fund. From my perspective, I was a co-sponsor of the original bill, and I had some particular concerns at the time, as I know the legislature did. When the bill was originally passed, with a lot of support from both houses of the legislature and local communities around the state, there were a number of concerns that were used to help, I guess, fuel the support for it. One was the Moose Pass chemical release. One was Peters Creek underground storage tank leak and the contamination of groundwater. The concern that I had particularly was with the Kenai Peninsula and some of the hazardous contaminated sites down there for a number of reasons. As many of you know, oil and gas was first developed on the Kenai Peninsula in Alaska. It was done, I think, probably to the standards of the day, but those standards are a far cry from what we recognize today as responsible standards. And because of the way that it was done and the lack of detailed records, who was responsible as new sites were found on the Kenai Peninsula, who was ultimately responsible, it was hard to determine in a lot of cases. And I suspect that a number of contaminated sites that have been identified and ones that will be identified in the future, we won't know who the owner was or who the responsible party was, and the burden of that will fall to the state. The estimate at the time was fairly significant. That was my main concern, and I was looking for a way to try to provide for eventual cleanup and protection from groundwater. Another site that was, I know, referenced at the time was the Child site on the north slope of Alaska. As you know, that was subsequently cleaned up by the major oil industries to their credit. But at the time, there was a lot of concern about who was going to be ultimately liable for an independent contractor who had accepted hazardous waste for disposal. The 470 Fund was passed before Exxon Valdez. And I look back at the history of the funding, and we didn't fund it very adequately, in my opinion, for the years before the Exxon Valdez. We also, after the Exxon Valdez, when we passed the nickel barrel surcharge, we passed the cores and depots, we passed a number of legislation that was designed to prevent, to a large degree, any future spill of the magnitude of the oil, of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. We also passed, at the time, strict liability legislation so that we could attribute the liability and responsibility for oil and hazardous substance and the transport and handling and ultimately responsibility to who, so that we would have somewhere to go when a problem did arise. It seems to me that after, at the time, I remember when, after the Exxon Valdez and the Senate actually passed over the nickel barrel surcharge and a number of other pieces of the legislation to the House, one of the concerns was, what happens if there's another major oil spill? Will we have a fund available? That was one of the concerns. Another one of the concerns, though, and a significant concern for a number of it, and my primary concern at the time voting on the legislation, was that we were not adequately funding the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Response Fund at the time. We funded it, I think, $500,000 the first year and $1 million the next year, and that was inadequate even for the sites on the Kenai, never mind the rest of the state. So I was looking for a way to fund the 470 Fund so that we would have adequate funds available. Had the nickel been split at the time and the money gone into the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Response Fund for what I envisioned at the time that the original 470 was passed, 1 cent would have probably been adequate. 2 cents would have been adequate. 2.5 cents certainly would have been adequate. But the legislature has substantially changed what has been funded out of the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Response Fund with respect to prevention, monitoring, contingency plans, and some of the things that might save money we haven't enacted. You know, if there were one contingency plan, instead of having to review numerous contingency plans, that might actually serve the state a lot better and also, I think, provide some significant savings. But that has been something that we have not yet been able to accomplish. I will say, for the record, that I think that the legislature has looked to the 470 funds sometimes for the wrong reasons. The ferry with oil spill capabilities certainly, I think, was a stretch. It was because money was available in the 470 fund. I think that was a stretch by the legislature and a mistake. Underground storage tanks have been funded out of the, and cleanup of such have been funded out of the 470 fund or the mitigation account. I supported at the time that we passed the legislation a 1 cent a barrel, or, I mean 1 cent a gallon gasoline tax as a way to fund that. Otherwise, eventually that responsibility will fall to the state. The legislature, when we passed the original nickel a barrel surcharge, recognized that there would be an on-off provision, and I think the accounting is flawed, because certainly the negative $12 million is not something that was ever envisioned by the legislature, and I think if you measure the amount that has been paid through the nickel a barrel, there should be a balance in the account, a substantial balance in the account. But we didn't know entirely what would be spent when we passed the nickel a barrel tax. There were several pieces of legislation that had fiscal notes attached that we could, I guess, extrapolate some amounts from. But we didn't know what all the expenses would be in order to try to prevent to try to do the job adequately that we were not doing adequately before the Exxon Valdez. And as you well know, Mr. Chairman and committee members, we found out a lot about what we were doing wrong after the fact and tried to correct it. It seems to me that because of the history of the legislature, including some of the funding that's been used out of the fund, that there's a legitimate concern that this is and has been made just an additional nickel a barrel tax to the industry. On the other hand, though, we have to recognize that the fund is appropriated by the legislature, and I think that the main focus of the debate ought to be not about how you limit spending specifically, but about what's needed in order to provide the programs that we want in this state in order to monitor and have proper oversight for oil and hazardous substance in the state. That ought to be the focus rather than trying to look at an amount that you're going to limit the department or the legislature to with respect to funding. And as I mentioned earlier, there might be some ways that we could reduce the cost to the department rather than just simply limiting the amounts of funds that we allow them to spend. The contingency plan argument, I think, is one way that we might be able to do that. As you know, Mr. Chairman, and I think committee members, one of the things that's been talked about for a long time in the state is whether or not ANWR will be allowed to be developed. I think that with respect to the history in Alaska, we've had a pretty good relationship between industry and the state for the most part, notwithstanding certain battles within the legislature. But certainly the history in Alaska has been beneficial for both the state and for the industry. And with respect to ANWR, certainly under this administration and Congress, that is likely to remain philosophically, I think, along the lines that they are now. I think it's incumbent upon us to provide for proper oversight and regulation of the industry, and make sure that we prevent going back to the pre-Exxon Valdez days with respect to the oversight that the department has. I think that limiting, you know, the splitting the nickel, as I mentioned, if we split it when we first put it in place, I think that maybe we would have been forced to reduce some of the things that we're doing. And if we just did the original intent when 470 was first passed, it might be adequate. But we've added on a lot of costs to the department since then that we will not be able to adequately fund in the future, absent, I think, some draw on the 470 fund and a nickel a barrel. Mr. Chairman, I just wanted an opportunity to provide my insights into what I think is the legislative history of the fund. I think that we've come a long way in the last 5 years, And I think that we need to protect against going back to the pre-Exxon Valdez days so that because the next time if we were to have a catastrophic event of that magnitude, I think that the recovery, not just environmentally but politically, would take a heck of a lot longer in order to repair. One final comment, and that is with respect to the $50 million that as being a goal of the fund, I think that that was one of the goals, so that we would have some funds available if there was a catastrophic spill. But it was also recognized at the time that a catastrophic spill, $50 million wouldn't be adequate. And the legislature recognized at the time that we would be spending money in order to try to prevent a catastrophic spill, because that, as you know, can save. We spent, there was over $2 or $3 billion spent on the spill, and it would seem that we can spend an awful lot from a nickel a barrel preventing both large and small spills and groundwater contamination, because once you have groundwater contamination in the state, it takes a long time to try to mitigate the effects of it. It's much more expensive to catch it on the front end than it is to catch it on the back end.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Barr. Is there any question for Representative Barr? Thank you, Mike. I'd also like to mention that Representative Green is in attendance also. With that, I believe, Senator Zaroff, you have a number of amendments that you would like to propose.
Yes, I have some here, and some of them are on behalf of Senator Adams, since he couldn't be here. Do we have a copy of those amendments?
Is the same ones, right?
Yeah.
What we can do is... What do you mean?
Those are different.
I don't know. That's what I was asking you, if they're the same.
I don't know. Were these the same amendments?
If you want to move the amendment, Senators are off, then we can discuss it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I make note that these amendments that you're receiving are based on the O version of the bill, since the U version came out this morning, but essentially I guess these parts are still within the bill itself, so you might find a page number off or a statement off or whatever, and I think Mr. Chenoweth could probably address that if he's here.
I don't believe he's here, but I think these will be pretty close to what they're...
Basically, I think pretty close to the original version. I'd move amendment number one.
And I will object for discussion.
And this is the, which was, I believe, the section, old section 32, which people were referring to this one as the blackmail clause. And I think probably one thing there that we can basically all agree on is that we want to see the spill reserve account of at least $50 million. And it seems to be true, regardless of what political party you're from, or from whether you're from the administration or from the public. This section says that if for any reason a precise amount of money is not appropriated, then the surcharge is not imposed, and we will not reach our $50 million goal. I just think that, and I know a number of other people feel that this should be eliminated from the bill. I mean, it's kind of the big stick type thing there. You know, if the legislature doesn't put the money in, then everything goes away. And I don't think that that's our intent.
Thank you. Well, it's and you know, Senator Zaroff, you've been around a few years longer than I have. But as you know, sometimes, just from my perspective in the years that I have been here, is that sometimes the legislature needs the big stick in order to make them carry out what was intended by original legislation. And it was my intent, if we're collecting nickels or 2.5 cents or whatever, then the money should be, if that's what we're collecting it for, then the money should be deposited in the fund instead of being diverted into other things, whatever they might be. And my feeling is sometimes the legislature does need a big stick to make it follow its own rules.
Okay. I appreciate that there, Mr. Chairman, but in the event there that something doesn't happen and you have the fund going away or no more money going into it, then you've created another problem. And that's here. And we can appreciate there that you don't worry too much about oil spills up around Fairbanks and North Pole, but we do worry about them considerably, particularly those of us that have gone through the experience there about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, five years. Many of us feel like it's yesterday, you know, feels like just like yesterday, and our minds are haven't gone through that.
Senator Donald, sir.
Mr. Chairman, did the subcommittee get a legal opinion on the constitutionality of such a provision? It seems to me like it's a backdoor way around the prohibition on dedicated funds.
Mr. Chenoweth drew this up, and we had discussions with him. He did not bring up that discussion at any point in the discussions, that he felt that it was a violation of dedicated funds.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just raise a constitutional question about it, because I wasn't on the subcommittee. This is kind of
sure.
Minor first impression to me. But just looking at it, you can't do indirectly what the Constitution prohibits you doing directly. I mean, you can't get cute with the Constitution. And if you're saying that a particular tax goes away if you don't use it for a specific purpose, that's just a reverse way of saying you're going to use the tax for a specific purpose. And I think we may have a constitutional problem there. I mean, unless, you know, there's something out there that says, you know, different, but just my initial impression is I'd be real concerned about a clause that says that.
We will ask that opinion of our AG also. There is another committee referral of finance on this one. Our legal opinion did not bring up this discussion at all. And knowing Mr. Chenoweth, I believe he would have if he felt that there was a problem.
I agree with you, Mr. Chairman.
But we will ask both the AG department and our legal for an opinion on this. And to be, if this moves out of this committee, we will, you know, ask that those opinions be sent along with the bill to the next committee referral.
Mr. Chairman, on page 19, there are lines 18 and 19. I see there's an additional clause interjected here that if the governor vetoes or reduces the amount appropriated under number one, then again the surcharge is not levied. I mean, that's seems to be not only a hammer but a bigger hammer in trying to tie the hands of the administration as well.
Actually, if I could go back, and actually we did have some discussion that I believe is in language now. There is sort of a blackmail clause in the statute now, but it's very loosely worded. But I believe that part is in the particular is in statute now. I would have to go back, but I do remember some of the discussion on that particular part. And I can't find it right now. And
okay. Now that we've had the amendment and discussed it, I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
I will. I will maintain my objection.
Well, I'll just move the amendment.
Okay. I will call roll then. Senator Donnelly.
Yes.
Senator Zara.
Yes.
Senator Lehman.
No.
And I vote no. Amendment fails. Next amendment. Senator Zara.
Amendment number two is the one that is labeled 06 up at the top. It's a Chenoweth Amendment. Here again, based on version O, it would have to be adopted, would have to be modified to conform with the...
Right, it would be modified to conform with the new version.
Okay. And this amendment would allow the fund to be tapped to provide safe drinking water resource or source should the existing source be polluted by the release of oil or other hazardous substance. And a few times the issue has come up, and it would have been more cost effective to use these funds to drill a new watering point. And I suppose that, which would not be done because of this would be considered a capital project. And maybe Marla could address that a little further if you wish there on behalf of Senator Adams.
If you would like to go right ahead. If you just state your name for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Marla Berg, and I work for Senator Adams. The very few times this has happened before, since the 470 fund couldn't be used for capital projects, if a water source was polluted and the community didn't have enough money to drill a new water source themselves, they would go through Village Safe Water and get on the Village Safe Water list, and maybe sometime the next year there would be funds appropriated for a new water source, because usually they would end up at the top of the priority list because that's based on public health priority. In some of these times, what they could have done, instead of trying to remediate the existing water source, they could have drilled a well for $50,000. Instead, they end up spending $300,000 trying to clean up the water source, the existing polluted water source. So that's what this amendment does.
Actually, I support the amendment. The only problem I have is that I think it's a little bit too broad for provisions for safe alternative to public drinking water. I mean, does that mean, the way it's written, I mean, we could, you know, be shipping in bottled water from France for the next 5 years, just the way it's written. I mean, I understand what you're trying to get to, but I don't think it's written that way.
Well, the language came from a bill that went through the legislative process a couple years ago, and that was the ultimate compromise language that was worked through, and so we just used that exact language. You know, we'd be happy to work with you on fine-tuning the amendment in any way.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I know it wasn't, that bill wasn't the ultimate compromise, because I offered some further language that wasn't accepted, and so...
I had Chenoweth do the...
My idea of ultimate is when everybody else agrees with me.
Okay.
But I do remember...
According to Chenoweth, this is the final version, let's say.
There you go. Still move the amendment.
Okay, I will object. However, I do believe it's a reasonable amendment. However, I would like to work with the senator's staff if we could come up with something that tightens it down, that we can submit it to the next committee of referral before it pass out of this committee. Thank you. Any further discussion? Senator Donnelly.
Yes.
Senator Zuroff.
Yes.
Senator Lehman.
No.
And I vote no. Amendment fails 2-2. Next amendment.
Okay. Amendment number 3. Again, the same prefix here. It's made with the on the other version of the bill. And what this does is just it puts back the hazardous substances into the catastrophic fund there. And you know, we know that eliminating these here does not relieve the responsibility there of being able to respond to these in a fashion there with the catastrophic funds.
Thank you. Right. Okay. I will call, if there's no further discussion, I will call roll. Seeing none. Senator Donnelly.
Yes.
Senator Zuroff.
Yes.
Senator Lehman.
Yes.
I vote no. Amendment passes 3-1. Next amendment.
Amendment number 4. Everybody has copies of it. References to the hazardous substances should be retained in the catastrophic account. The heaviest. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I didn't quite go far enough on the other one. Maybe I would have got your vote, too. Amendment number 4 is one that's labeled 09 up at the top. And this deletes the accrued interest from specifically being part of the contingency and abatement account. Apparently these funds are part of the general fund, and I don't have a problem there when calculating the value of the fund, considering the nickels recovered, funds from the nickels spent for fees approved by the legislature. If DEC needs the general fund monies, then they should come before the legislature rather than having it rolled back into the fund.
Okay. I will oppose this amendment, because that was one of the discussions that we had with DEC. It would be a way to help them to fund their ongoing programs they had, for them to also be able to use the interest off the fund. And I know that DEC you know, does support the concept of using the interest off the fund for their ongoing programs, and so I will oppose that amendment for that reason.
Do you reach the point of dedication of funds on this one?
Again, Mr. Chenowitz did not bring that up, and I know over in the past Mr. Chenowitz has been a stickler on dedicated funds. But here again, we will ask this question of both of our legal and the AGs to address this particular issue.
I don't know what that amount actually works out to.
It'd be, well, 5% interest. If we had $50 million, at 5% interest would be $2.5 million, depending on whatever the interest rates are.
So in the bill, how is this interest? Could you show me the section again, or how this interest is dedicated?
It's section 15,
page 10. So it just says the interest is going to be deposited into this account, and then the legislature appropriates.
And the amendment says basically it goes into the general fund.
Right.
And deposits into the general.
See, I don't think that's a. I think that is a way. It's not really dedicating the funds because the legislature still would have to take an action to appropriate it. It's different than the other one because then the whole program goes, an action actually occurs without legislative action on the other one.
Yeah.
I think you're probably right, Senator Donnelly. I think probably if the money is going into the fund, even though it needs a legislative appropriation, I personally believe it becomes more difficult for the legislature to appropriate it for other source or for other things out there other than for DEC programs.
But they clearly have the authority.
They clearly have that authority, but I think it politically it becomes a little bit harder.
And the distinction here I want to make from my personal legal analysis is it takes an affirmative act to appropriate this money anyhow.
That's correct.
The other case, there was no affirmative act needed for the tax to go away.
Right.
Yeah.
If there are no further discussions, we'll call the roll.
Do you still want to take this one?
Well, yeah, this is on behalf of.
I believe Senator Adams. This is on behalf of Senator Adams.
Yeah, he had asked that I would introduce it. I mean, I'd go for it, but who knows?
Senator Donnelly.
No.
Senator Zurov.
Sponsor, I'll vote yes.
Senator Lehman.
No.
And I vote no. Amendment fails 3-1. And we have your next amendment.
The amendment number 5. Will take us back to an earlier argument there of
I think it's
2 cents.
Two.
Yeah, 2 cents going to the catastrophic and 3 cents to the contingency and abatement. And I think we kind of ran that one back and forth for a while, and probably those of us there that feel that it's important for the department to be able to continue to function feel that this is probably the way that it should go.
Okay.
Let the split should
thank you. I will object and maintain it. If there is no committee discussion, Senator Donnelly.
Yes.
Senator Zuroff.
Yes.
Senator Lehman.
No.
And I vote no. Amendment fails 2-2. Do you have any further amendments?
Do you have any other?
Yeah.
I have some.
Okay. Senator Donnelly. Actually, I think Senator, if you're ready to offer them right now, I know Senator Lehman has some amendments. Okay, Senator Lehman, I think they're already. Well, you're right in there. So unless yours are all ready to go.
Well, they're real simple. At the request of Senator Adams. Also.
Okay, great. Senator Adams picked a good day to be excused.
In fact, Mr. Chairman, I would like permission if I move these on by request to Senator Adams. I'd like the department to speak on them because they're things the department supported. So if I could.
Sure.
The first would to simply delete section 9 from the bill.
Section 9, okay.
Both just deletion.
Okay, I will object to that amendment.
And I thank the chair for, because I'm doing these on behalf of the
Understand. Mr. If you just state your name.
Mr. Chair, my name is Robert Poe. I'm with the Department of Environmental Conservation. The deletion of the change to Section 9 reflects the issue that under this change, it just says that a responsible party would have to take cleanup and containment action and not actually contain or clean up. And under the current wording, it actually requires the responsible party to contain and clean up a spill. So we would support going back to the original language.
I guess I'm missing something. I kind of see this as semantics right now.
It says the department may attach reasonable terms and conditions to its approval or modification of a contingency plan that the department determines are necessary to ensure that the applicant for a contingency plan has access to sufficient resources to protect environmentally sensitive areas. And it would have said protect environmentally sensitive areas and contain, clean up, and mitigate potential oil discharges. This change says that same party would have to demonstrate that they had sufficient resources to protect environmentally sensitive areas to take containment and cleanup and other necessary action to mitigate potential oil discharges. This was also recommended by the Attorney General's office. They feel that it waters down the action that the responsible party would actually have to take.
So to speak. Waters down?
Yeah. Sorry, no pun intended.
We should, next time we're not going to let him go home for the week.
Can we have that one more time, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
The Attorney General's office, in their review of these words, believe that by changing this as it is written here in version U, that what we ask the responsible party to demonstrate now is that they have sufficient resources to take cleanup and containment action, not to clean up and contain. And so the concern was that really the responsible party should be able to demonstrate sufficient resources to contain and clean up, not resources to take some action.
Thank you. Are there any further questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to. Both versions have cleanup.
This would just delete the entire Section 9, so we would go back to language now in current statute. And what we have done in this proposed amendment or this proposed bill would put in the words take containment and cleanup and other necessary action too. And this, by deleting Section 9, we just go back to current statute.
Yes.
Which,
the subtlety, if I may, Mr. Chairman, the subtlety, at least from the Attorney General's office, is the difference between action and actually cleaning up. This could be read to mean that the responsible party goes out and does something related to cleaning up and relating to containment, and that would be viewed sufficient.
Okay. Any committee discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would view this as taking the action to mitigate and not just, you know, going and putting on a jumpsuit and buying a ticket. I mean, that would be taking action, but I mean actually involved in action up to that point to where it is mitigated. And I acknowledge that it may not all be cleaned up, but you'd be to the point to where you'd mitigate that further. And I think maybe suggesting that it could be quite a bit less than that is, in my opinion, would be inaccurate.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, that may very well be true. The problem with law is that we read it 4 or 5 years later when all the people at this table are doing something else, and then we only have the words to depend on. And so the lawyer's reading is this does significantly limit what a responsible party would have to do.
Can I get right back in? Excuse me. What we're saying here is, I guess this is all under the approval, the department's authority to approve a contingency plan?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the department is basically really didn't have anything, or does it have anything to do with if a spill occurred, what happens when a spill occurs, but it has to do with contingency plan that must be approved by the department
prior to them being approved, not really doesn't have to do with the cleanup part. It really has to do with getting your contingency plan approved, right?
Yes, in this section it does. But we would suggest that a contingency plan is a direct result on their ability to clean up a spill.
Well, I understand that, but but it's all kind of prospective, it seems to me, and the department basically has the authority and the responsibility to determine whether this company's plan is contingency plan is adequate to clean up. Or I guess what you're saying is the dispute is whether they have or will have the ability to clean up an oil spill versus just make an effort to clean it up?
Yes, sir.
Senator Donnelly. Well, Mr. Chairman, the department supports the status quo, but I haven't heard an argument yet for why we'd want to change that status quo. I mean, I hear why they think this might be an undesirable change, but I haven't heard any make an argument for why we want to do this change.
Senator Pierce, you had your hand up.
I had a different comment.
It's one of these things, and as we have gone through on a couple other spots, as going through different draftings, I noticed that the drafter sometime will make changes just because they think it's more correct grammar. I don't know. It's one of those issues that, you know, because it's my opinion, if the department may attach reasonable terms, if the department thinks that this plan isn't sufficient, that they'll just reject it or say, you know, come back with different terms. So I'm not sure if this is a big deal one way or the other. I'm really not sure.
Mr. Chairman, we're honestly not sure if it's a big deal or not either in the future, but we think if we're not absolutely sure why we should change it, let's not, because we believe that the wording right now does a good job.
Sure. Somebody suggested this, and I'm guessing it was a bill drafter. And unless somebody else comes forward and acknowledges themselves, you know, as being the author of this, I'm going to assume it was that, and that you know, we should have the bill drafter defend this in terms of making it more consistent with our existing way we word statutes. Is there anybody here who can speak to this? Is in the audience?
I don't believe Mr. Chenoweth is here. I will ask Representative Green. I know that, you know, of course, you've done a lot over on the House side with this, and I know a lot of the original wording was taken some of your original versions. Do you remember? Did you have any discussion on this particular thing?
No. Okay.
Well, it would be, you know, I just don't see either one way or the other. So at this time, I would remove my objections to Senator Donnelly's amendment. Are there any objections? Hearing none, passes. Senator Donnelly, you had one more.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next one is by request of Senator Adams to delete another deletion. Sections 26 and 28, and I understand that's a request also by the department and the department. I'd ask the committee's indulgence at the department.
Sure, go right ahead. Let's go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These two items define when a release is imminent. This is a part of the law that we have to act on sometimes a couple times in a week to determine what is imminent. Our biggest concern here is that this redefinition of imminent asks for Monday morning quarterbacking. It's a difficult situation to determine when a spill presents imminent and substantial threat to the environment, to life and health. We do our best to judge on that, to make a determination, and we believe that these further refinements could call into question a lot of suits after the fact by a responsible party. If we do go in and act and seek cost recovery, this definition may be used as a reason to say, well, was it really imminent threat? Was it impending to the point of happening? How do you determine what was impending to the point of happening? Exactly. Was the incident or occurrence reasonably expected to culminate in actual release? Maybe it wasn't actual release now, maybe it was threatened release now. In other words, we feel that this invites a lot of points for debate in a legal test, a legal contest, that perhaps aren't really what the intent of the overall legislation is, which is to be able to respond to spills that present imminent and substantial threat to people, the environment, the health of Alaskans. So we would like the existing wording. We think it does the job.
I will maintain an objection to this one because I think this wording, the new wording, really sets out, you know, a definition as it is now. Threat and release means an imminent danger that a release will occur. I think that I believe that the new language gives you more flexibility in dealing with it. I really do. So, you know, I followed your reasoning, but I don't think it really works in this case. Senator Lehman.
Mr. Chairman, I concur, and Bob, I appreciate your concerns, and I would share those if I felt that was a real problem, but I think this language helps clarify and actually helps you or the commissioner, you know, your department, walk through this and have your checklist, and it actually should help reduce the chance of the lawsuits you know, regarding that, because you have some steps that you go through. I think, to me, it's very clear, and actually BI would be probably pretty close to what it is today, and as well as A. So.
I think, as oftentimes the case with these, it's how you read the words, and we're sort of on the opposite end of that firing line, and we'd rather not be sort of second guess. It's a hard thing when you're facing the spill in the face and you deal with it now. So our concern is that sort of a generally worded guidance has been better for us. It's basically a difference in the reading.
Okay. Senator Frank.
Can you give me an example or give me specific examples of what kinds of actions are being taken by the department under this section?
Could I ask Mike Conway to step up? He's our director of SPAR, and he could answer this a little more directly.
Mike, could you state your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Michael Conway. I'm the director of the Division of Spill Prevention and Response. What we're dealing with here in many times is a potential for a spill, whether it's a fishing vessel on the rocks. Let's say that the tank has not been punctured, but given the weather and so forth that's predicted, that there may be a situation where you've got to take action to pump off the tanks before the weather comes. And let's say the weather changes and it never happens. You know, the way the wording is here, it seems like there's just a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking cranked in here. You can come in later and say, well, it wasn't going to occur. The weather changed. Or it can be some technical things on a tank. In other words, if there's action taken to prevent a spill and the spill does not occur, there's a loophole in there where somebody can come in and say, well, you had bad judgment. That wasn't going to leak. If you just waited, it would have gone away. Or, you know, we had enough time to bring in somebody to Dutch Harbor from Anchorage, even though the weather's bad, to fix it. They would have been there in a few days. So it just provides, that's the kinds of things.
Well, in this wording, that argument doesn't hold water. I mean, the incident or occurrence may reasonably expect what you just described. I think that any reasonable person could reasonably expect that it would accumulate in an actual release and that there would be damage to the environment. So what you just described would be covered under this language. I think it was a bad example you picked out.
Mr. Chair, you could get on any of it, you can get people to agree on what reasonably may or may not be expected. It's just that what if the right people don't agree later on?
Well, under the wording now, it says that the release will occur. Well, under that same argument you just gave me, the weather changes, those people could argue, well, you know, it didn't occur, and you said, you know, it will occur. You don't know it will occur. You don't know whether the weather's going to change or not.
Right.
I think actually the new language, gives you more flexibility in dealing with that.
Now, if that's the expectation and that goes along with this, that's what we can work under, as long as that, because you'll get the situation where scene on scene coordinators or people are out on scene to make a decision, and they need to know that in their best judgment at the time, it may not be exacting or so forth, because you don't have all the details. But if they're not going to be called later to second guess, or somebody has to eat the money, and I'm wondering, you know, responsible parties, for instance, might come back later and say, well, the state shouldn't have done that because the spill didn't occur and that person didn't have the right judgment.
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, I think just for the purposes of building a legislative record for this, I will say that in the example that you cited, I would consider that to be an imminent release. And, you know, and examples like that, I think there should be no question. Anytime, you know, you have a vessel on the rocks, that is certainly one where it would be imminent.
Senator Donald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have you had engaged in any litigation over the meaning of the existing statute?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Donnelly, I haven't while I worked for the state. When I was federal on-scene coordinator with the Coast Guard, whenever we had taken action to mobilize gear and get the gear set, ready to go, and then would go back to the responsible party, yes, we've run into difficulty in saying that you shouldn't have moved that gear. And that ended up the vessel refloated, no oil was spilled. Hey, you know, you guys made a bad call. So as far as the state goes, no, but as a federal on-scene coordinator, I've experienced that.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Was this experienced before or after the Exxon Valdez?
This is before the Exxon Valdez.
That's why I wanted to bring that up for the record. I think that, as Senator Zaroff said 20 or 30 minutes ago, it seems like it was only yesterday, and I think that seems like it was only yesterday will continue for those of us who have a memory. I don't think that you'd ever find anybody in a position to challenge a situation that you described, as opposed to, say, a tank on the a flat that it was a nice sunny day, and for some reason you thought, well, rust may allow that tank to leak. I think there is some judgment needed, and I think that when it's in the old expression they used to use, the average reasonable man would be sitting there thinking, is this a reasonable time for deployment? I don't think you'll have an error or a problem of erring in the manner of trying to prevent.
Thank you. If there's no further committee discussion, Senator Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how I want to ask this here, but and maybe the example that you used with the vessel on ground is probably one there that very few people would argue with. Is there another example that you could give that maybe could go either way without being so?
Mr. Chair, I can't think of one right now.
How about this last weekend here, where we had the vessel? I think was out of Homer or Kenai that was approaching the dock and lost power and all of that. There, at some point there. Or there were two vessels involved. I guess one lost their anchor and chain and everything. And at what point would that become in imminent danger? Or at some point, who would have to react and when, and still fall under the guidelines here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Zaroff, as soon as I found out that a vessel was disabled adrift, and it was in the vicinity of being able to strike objects, and in other words, not being out in the Gulf of Alaska where it could drift for days. But even in that case, maybe, but I'd start moving resources right away in coordination with the Coast Guard. That you're not too early with any. The vessel you're mentioning is the Overseas Washington, and it was coming through Cook Inlet fully loaded and had a short power problem, and they were able to get it under control. So in this particular one, things were corrected before the state had to mobilize any resources. But if we say we had and this does occur where vessels will become adrift out in the Bering Sea be drifting towards one of the islands, that I know the Coast Guard takes action to start moving resources and setting up the unified command and so forth, and we would be a part of that. But the earlier the better.
But I guess at what point would you take the preventative measures to keep it from going on shore and still feel that you're able to operate under the response, you know, set forth in the bill? I mean, I would guess that the carrier is we would say that we've got this under control right up until the last minute. And if you take a preventive action before that, they'll say, well, you reacted too soon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Zoff, again, and that's in this sort of scenario, we would be operating on a unified command system, and as I've heard around the table this afternoon, that if you move some resources, it appears that the vessel could drift onto the rocks at any point. You can take action to prevent that from happening, and it would then, if the vessel doesn't end up on the rocks, see, that's what I'm trying to get at in this afternoon's testimony. But let's say the vessel does, you know, passes right through, and this has happened where it sailed right on through there. But if you have the state and the Coast Guard working together to take the actions, to be prepared to take action to prevent it, and you use the test of the reasonable person, then from what I've heard this afternoon, the reasonable person aspect would allow us to go ahead and work with the Coast Guard. And I would hate to see something to prevent us from, you know, going to the Coast Guard and saying, we're working with you, we're, you know, unified command, we've got all these plans together, and then something comes up where we say, well, they want to do this, that, or the other thing. We say, well, we can't be part of that because we're, you know, we got our hands tied. So I don't, and that's why I think in a unified command, if we're working together, if you go to the Coast Guard, they, you know, they would, if they're going to take some action, that would be part of the reasonable man test that you mentioned.
Senator Pearson.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, Mr. Conway, whether your arguments really pertain to vessels or facilities where there's either no plan or I haven't followed your argument through. I think clearly if you have a vessel like the Overseas Washington that loses power and then apparently after it stopped with the was it the Overseas Washington that then lost its anchor the other day?
I believe it was.
Okay. So they dropped anchor. Well, they used their anchor to go in anyway. So that was certainly not anything new or different. And they just waited to go in until they had power back through an auxiliary pump, as I understand it. But taking this change definition of threat and release, which the department doesn't like, I'm trying to figure out how in the language as it's laid out you're finding a place where you think anyone could argue with you that that it isn't a better definition than just the old one, which was threat and release means in imminent danger that a release will occur. I mean, the old language was will occur, and this says may reasonably be expected to occur. In your old language, you had to say, the commissioner had to say, this is going to happen, not we think it might happen if the sea state stays the same way it is and the winds keep blowing the way they are and so on and so forth. So I agree with Senator Miller. I think this new language gives you a lot more flexibility. And I'm trying to think of a time when you're being able to say that you reasonably expect that perhaps there's going to be a problem. That isn't a lot more flexible than the old language that says flat, it's going to happen. And I'm not there yet.
Okay, well, as Mr. Chair, Senator Pierce, the an immediate danger is thrown in there before that, you know, that a release will occur, and that's the qualifying language. But I, you know, based upon the discussion this afternoon, I think you made a good point. But I just want to be assured that we are not going to be put in a position where we're out second guessing people. And if
I guess maybe my question would be perhaps not for you, but for a Department of Law attorney, which language they think is stronger in terms of us attempting to recover costs? Because isn't that what you're, I think that's what Mr. Paul said, that the concern by the department is where are you going to have the strongest argument to recover costs? Is that a fair statement, or do you want me to have?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pierce, it also, if we were to be expending funds from the accounts, whatever account that it was, that it would be, if we need to have the flexibility to be able to use funds to respond to a potential threat of a spill, in addition to recovering the costs. So an argument can be made when somebody comes back later, an RP.
Hey, Fred. Tell him you've got important work right here.
Don't let him bully you, Fred.
Is the amendment still offered?
Depends on, does the department still want the amendment off? Leave it on there because I'm doing it by request.
Okay, well, we how are going back into forward session, so we need to deal with this one way or the other.
This time, I couldn't speak on behalf of the commissioner, but I think the discussion has been helpful this afternoon as far as clarifying what the intent is, and that was my concern as the director of this program. So with that in there, I'd be, you know, it's this language would be acceptable with that understanding.
With that, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Okay, and Amendment 7 has been withdrawn. Next, we will go. Is that the last amendment you had, Senator Donnelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is.
I believe we have one more amendment, Senator Lehman, which will be Amendment Number 8.
I move Amendment Number 8 and ask for unanimous consent.
I will object for discussion purposes.
Okay, Amendment 8, I brought this up in the subcommittee, but I think a few of us were there. This is the inflation-proofing provision for the catastrophic oil release response account, in which the $50 million will ride according to there's a CPI adjustment. And my idea behind this is just so to make sure that what we have in today's dollar for $50 million will be equivalent in the future. And so I offer this for the committee.
Committee discussion? Senator Donnelly.
I didn't
voting.
You objected?
I objected.
Yes.
Senator Zaroff.
Yes.
Senator Frank.
Yes.
Senator Pierce.
Yes.
Senator Lehman.
Yes.
And I vote no. Amendment passes. I believe that's the last of the amendments.
I have a couple more amendments.
Oh, go right ahead.
Have they been handed out? Or are they're all in the packet. No.
I apologize for the night. Can you run through, while they're passing that out, run through 1 through,
yes.
1 through 5, and tell me what passed and what failed?
1 through 5, let's see, I believe all of them failed except for the third one, which was the adding hazardous waste back into what the fund can be used for. That one did pass.
Oh.
That's the one vote.
There's no designation on this, so.
But, so 1 and 2 failed, 3 passed, 4 and 5 failed. Senator Zura.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Remove the amendment.
I will object.
Okay, this amendment provides that that after the report from the commissioner that is required to be submitted in the first 120 hours is received, then the governor does not need to do anything, and he lets the efforts continue. But he can terminate the use of the funds by administrative order if he feels not to allow it to continue. Right now, the way it's set up there is that if there is a spell or whatever it might be, that the commissioner has 120 hours in order to be able to respond to it, and then that is to continue, then the governor has to respond with an executive order that allows it to continue, the work continue. And I think that this is somewhat cumbersome on the process because we know how long it could take an executive order to go through. But what this says is that if the cleanup and everything has started and is continuing on, that it doesn't stop after the 120 hours, that the governor can, you know, by not doing anything, allow it to continue, but he still has the ability to stop it.
And this is strictly a policy call upon the committee. I basically favor the other language where the governor has to take a proactive action in letting it continue on, you know, other than things happening just by default. But it's strictly a policy call by the committee.
Well, at least I think this amendment allows, if necessary, for no break to occur in the process, and it allows the efforts to continue.
If there is no further committee discussion, Senator Donnelly.
Yes.
Senator Zaroff.
Yes.
Senator Frank.
No.
Senator Pierce.
No.
Senator Lehman. I vote no. Amendment fails. That was amendment number 9.
Senator Lehman vote on that?
No.
Senator Zaroff?
Oh, this is my ferry.
This is the ferry one.
Do we stick the railroad in this one, too?
Sure, let's get the railroad in there.
I think we're just like, what does this do? Lets them build ferries.
Lets them build ferries?
Well, it doesn't necessarily let them build ferries. Lets them use some of the funds for for the construction of part of the ferry system.
Lets them build ferries. Senator Zaroff,
we certainly know there that they're not going to be able to build a ferry there for the amount of money that you would have in the catastrophic economy, but at least the prohibition there that is included in this bill does not allow any funds to be used in the event there that a ferry is being constructed, so that it would be able to accommodate whatever means are necessary, communications, what they call a
boom
control center or whatever, to be built into it. But we all know there that if there is a state vessel available, whether it's a ferry system or whether it's some other state or vessel, that if it's an emergency and a disaster, that it will be utilized. And what we're saying here is that if the arguments can be made that part of the catastrophic funds can be used to build the ferry, and if it's going to cost more than what it would normally cost, that they can go to this fund.
Thank you. Senator Lincoln.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to refer to my good friend, the representative from Kenai, Representative Barr's comments earlier that building a ferry was a stretch, and I think probably adopting this amendment would be a stretch, too.
Well, I certainly don't agree.
I know you don't.
And I don't know if it is a stretch, but during that last bill, that one of the vessels did play a very important role. And unfortunately, they were equipped to handle the circumstances that they were on call for. And if you have to have special equipment on board there to handle a command center or whatever, and it costs you additional money to do that, to meet that specific reason there for the ferry being built or utilized, then it ought to be paid for out of this fund.
Senator Pierce.
I think you can get the same place in a different way. If DEC decides that if they ever get around to having rail depots somewhere, anywhere, that they want to do roll-on, roll-off containers, and in those containers there's some communication gear. We've all agreed in the past that any ferry that was going to, if there was another Exxon Valdez type spill, any ferry would have to be diverted to some port to get rid of the passengers it had and of the vehicles it had before they got taken to an oil spill. They probably wouldn't like that very much. At the same time, those containers could be rolled on with that equipment. It's part of the depot, so it can be done without actually building it into the ferry. You can set up a communications center in a tent if you want to and have all the equipment you need. Now that we've got little cute little saucers that set up entire telephone systems that fit in a little halberd and suitcase, and so we could get where Senator Zaroff's wanting to go without having to put explicit language in about building new things into ferries. And the thing that concerns me most about this is in Senate Finance we had Commissioner Dotcuff. I know there's a concern on the part of some of the senators at the table and others that Dotcuff perhaps hasn't been pushing the ferry we're trying to build that already is, that already is using some 470 funds. We're $10 million short because we didn't get the federal funds that we were expecting. I want to make sure we don't add language in here and then suddenly find $10 million flows out to go to that ferry. We've already given 15. And what the commissioner is saying is he's not going to finish, he's going to build a ferry but not have all of the, in fact he said in committee, he said maybe not buy all the, not avionics, whatever ships have, but avionics for boats.
Navigational gear and all that
stuff. Rudder.
The engine.
I think he was going to have a rudder.
Any further committee discussion? Senator Donnelly.
Mr. Chairman, can I think about it a little bit longer?
Senator Zaroff.
Oh, yes.
Senator Frank.
No.
Senator Pierce.
No.
Senator Lehman?
No.
Senator Donnelly?
No. You vote
no. And I vote no. Amendment 10 fails. Is there any other amendments?
One other one here.
That's the last one, Senator.
This is it, yeah. And I this was that question I had, remember, right at the beginning of the section one, I think, of the bill. And I'm still unclear on this one because, and I think the drafter became somewhat unclear. But what this would do is would basically eliminate those sections. It puts the hazardous materials back in, and it also restores the mechanism by which the municipal grants could be made from the fund. And this was a limitation of $10 million on this one. And I think it also changed the 120-hour provisions in Section 20. But I guess I'm still not certain what we did to those communities out there in being able to receive funds to be able to respond to the to a spill. And I kind of wish that the drafter was here to respond to that. But it still is a concern, and I've been thinking about it, and I can't think of an answer.
Senator Zaroff, I think that we probably do need more clarification. However, the drafter couldn't be with us today, so.
Could I offer a suggestion?
Yes.
I assume that the bill is going to pass out. I'm not going to vote for it. But,
sure. The next committee of referral is finance, and I would certainly send this amendment.
Would you forward this amendment?
This amendment will be forwarded with the other questions that we had. You had the question on the dedicated fund on that one amendment, and I think that's a legitimate question, and we'll send that forward to get not only our opinion, but our legal opinion, but the AG's opinion.
Okay, because I think this is something that really needs to be taken a good look at there,
sure,
to make sure that we're not excluding some of those communities from being able to participate.
And I will work with you on this amendment just to see if it does, see if your concerns are met.
I'll withdraw the amendment with the understanding that it
will
be sent out.
Sure. And we'll work with your staff on clearing that up. So, with that, is there any committee discussion on 215? Senator Donnelly.
Mr. Chairman, this is essentially a very large spending bill because we're removing a source of revenue from the state for the benefit of specific payers. And I'm real concerned about how it's going to roll into our overall fiscal plan for this year. We're losing resources here, income to the state, a lot of money, and there's some analysis here. It's a lot of money to the state, but to the people who it's going to impact, it may be as little as 1% of their profit from some of the testimony that's before the committee for the year, and yet we're going to be asking all kinds of other lessons to make very, very significant reductions in state assistance to them, people that are very, very needy. And not nearly as wealthy as some of the folks that are involved with this particular program. And without an overall spending plan, I'm real concerned about what the impacts of this are going to be on our budget. And certainly the things that this money is being used for now are essential activities. We certainly all should continue to hope that generations for the future remember the lessons that we all experienced with the Exxon Valdez. And I'm afraid that, the fiscal pressures are going to be tremendous to make those kind of reductions in the kind of programs that this money would no longer be there is funding now. And I'm real concerned about that, and it's difficult for me to know whether those concerns are going to be addressed without a spending plan before me for this, and in fact for last fiscal year, because we still haven't solved last fiscal year's problems yet. So This is a huge spending bill, essentially what this is, because we're going to be losing these resources, and we're going to have to either chop something else out of the budget, or do away with the programs this funds, or come up with additional revenues, and that's very concerning without seeing the plan.
I will mention that this bill does. The next committee referral is finance. Senator Lehman.
Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't want to leave the discussion there with the characterization of this bill as doing that.
at least my interpretation is that we've clarified what the uses of the fund are. I don't view this as a way for the state to lose resources. If indeed that's happening, then we're using the 470 fund for the wrong purposes, and then we would be admitting that. And I view it not so much as doing something for a taxpayer or a set of taxpayers as we are protecting a fund to make sure that it's there for the purposes that we want, that it's going to be there for the catastrophe and as well be there for the ongoing needs of the state of Alaska in preparing for oil spills or potential oil spills. And so I will be supporting its discharge for those reasons.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess in the words of one of our leaders in the state there, that we don't have a crisis. You know, we've got an accountability problem here. And I think that this has been sort of the premise that we've started to work with at the beginning, and I don't think anybody disagreed there, that there was an accountability and a bookkeeping problem in regards to the use of this fund and the monies that were taken in and categorized for different accounts. So, you know, I find it difficult there to, especially without the Ferry Amendment on there, I find it difficult to support it.
Senator Dolan. Yeah, and there's been conflicting testimony, and there's been a lot of written testimony submitted as to this whole notion of what are the right and the wrong purposes and what was the original intent of the 470 fund. I don't think it's necessarily clear that this is the wrong purposes, what it's being used for now. And I don't think the record really reflects that it's clear. There's an awful lot of conflicting discussion of that. So I think that, you know, I just wanted to say that certainly people may have that opinion that they think that this particular utilization of the fund is different than the original intent, but other people don't have that opinion. And I just want to put that on the record, too.
The wish of the committee?
Question, which version did we have before?
We're on the U version. Fairly.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we discharge from committee CS Senate Bill number 215 resources, U version as amended in committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Yeah, there is.
And accompanying fiscal notes.
I will call roll. Okay. Senator Donnelly?
No.
Senator Zaro?
No.
Senator Frank?
Yes.
Senator Pierce? Senator Lehman?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Bill discharges from committee on a 4-2 vote.
I'm tired of this one.
Oh, my. The next bill that we will deal with is Senate Bill 308. Mr. Eason? No. Minority stop.
Without Suzanne.
It's something we would never do.
Do we put a time limit on the respect each other?
Kelly 308 stuff.
I'm going to remember that.
Let's limit it to 1 minute. We got
home makers?
Yeah. We got all these people, and I mean, we're under time crunch. Lots of people to testify.
We'll knock on the door and tell you the 308 stuff.
Mr. Eason, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to cut anyway.
Is this teleconference?
Yes. There are people to testify on 308. Go right ahead.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim Eason, Director of the Division of Oil and Gas. There are a couple of matters before beginning. And testimony last week, as well as in subsequent testimony for the House on the House counterpart of this bill, HB 474, there have been several concerns expressed about whether or not the state has the authority legally to condition, once we issue an oil and gas lease, future activities, including and up to a prohibition on surface entry. And I had asked for an opinion from the Department of Law to confirm exactly my belief that we do have that authority, because it is pivotal to our proposal that you approve in this legislation the phased consideration and consistency determinations and best interest findings of lease sales. And for the record, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, a letter was submitted this morning dated February 22nd from Barbara Fulmer, an assistant attorney general, which does confirm that. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we have before you this morning a committee substitute for Senate Bill 308 resources.
Okay.
With some amendments that were done since the last hearing, it's my understanding that it's the pleasure of the chairman this morning that I discuss the changes.
Go right ahead.
That committee substitute would accomplish, as well as to point out some concerns that we have identified to the resources staff that would require further amendment and to discuss what those are. Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, all the changes, I think it's fair to say that this committee substitute would accommodate our concerns, are done as a result of concerns that were expressed in the hearing before Senate Resources last week and also on the House side last week, to try to accommodate many of the issues and concerns that were raised by public testimony. One of the things that was clear was that there was a belief that we were proposing with SB 308 to limit the scope of what would be considered in a best interest finding and a coastal consistency determination to exclude things that the public might raise. And one of the things that is done in this CS is to make clear that timing and the place for the scope limitation that's proposed to occur. And there are several instances where you will see that it is made clear in this committee substitute that the intent is that the scope be defined in writing at the time the best interest finding is done. Also, there was what I would call a rather lightning rod-like reaction to the term non-speculative. And you will find in this committee substitute that the standard non-speculative is deleted and it is replaced with something that we hope will give some comfort to those who objected because it is a standard that is currently applied under federal law and federal regulations. What we're proposing alternatively is the use of significant, reasonably foreseeable, significant direct effects. And those are the kinds of effects that are considered and under the federal law. Also, there was some concern that was raised internally with our legal review about the use of the term the law, in several places in the original bill. The law has been replaced, as we believe was the original intent, with the statutes and with the applicable statutes and regulations, so that it is clear that we will be in conformance with those laws and regulations which apply to the best interest finding and to the coastal zone consistency determination. Also, Mr. Chairman, these changes are rather what I would consider housekeeping type amendments. But when you look at Section 2 of the bill, there is a rewrite of that section, which is intended, again, to be responsive to the comments that were received. One of the things that we picked up was the belief that we were somehow trying to limit the consideration of comments that were received from the public and as opposed to the standards or the things that we must consider that are set out in the statutes currently under AS 3805-035G. And so when you look at that section G, it is rewritten to make clear that we are proposing that we be held to a standard which would require us to consider the facts that are known at the time of preparation of the finding. In other words, we will not only consider the facts that we know, but the facts that we have been made known that have been made known to us by public comment and agency review that are material. This is on line 11 of page 4 of the CS, that are material to issues that were raised during the period allowed for receipt of public comment, whether or not material to the matters to a matter set out in the list under Section G as it currently exists, and within the scope of set out in the director in a written finding under E1 of the section. And we also would be held responsible for considering those facts that are material to the matters already set out in statute. This section has been, we would propose, be slightly redrafted, and we can discuss the redrafting of that at your pleasure, Mr. Chairman, and that of the committee. But this is one of the areas in the rewrite that we feel the drafting missed our intent. Our intent was clearly not to require, as we believe the drafting suggests right now, that the public or an agency meet all three of those hurdles, A, B, and C. We did not intend that. That is too high of a standard, we believe, and rightfully drew some negative criticism. And so we have an alternative to that we can give you today that would address those concerns. And finally, the final section, the new section, Section 3 AS 4640, has also been redrafted. And that is another section where, again, legislative drafting, we believe, creates a situation that is likely to engender more negative public comments. And we have a solution that we think is more toward our intent and also more reflective of what we believe the federal provisions to be. Those are the significant changes and the purposes for those changes, Mr. Chairman. And if it is your pleasure, I can go through the specific line-by-line changes that we would propose to the committee substitute and explain why that's so, if you prefer.
I think my preference at this time would just go ahead and adopt the committee substitute. Then we can come back to those changes that you think that the drafter missed on your intent. Senator Lehman.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of CS Senate Bill 308 Resources, the J version at the top right-hand corner agenda with, and at least my copy, and I think probably everybody else's, has some handwritten changes in it that I would be willing to incorporate as part of this committee substitute for purposes of discussion. And so my motion includes all the handwritten changes also, so we don't have to deal with them separately.
Are there objections? Hearing none, we have adopted the committee substitute for discussion purposes. Senator Taylor, do you know what time we are headed back to the floor?
Yes. I think at any time now, you've concluded your caucus, haven't you?
Okay. We have a number of people on teleconference. We are scheduled to go back onto the floor. I'd also like to note, for the record, Senator Little has joined us at the table also. It would be my intention to go ahead and I have because we are on such a limited time period, I have limited for 1 minute for each person to testify. This is the second public testimony period that we've had on this particular piece of legislation. Because as of right now, I have at least 15 people signed up, plus more people here in the audience. So it would be my intent to go ahead and start the public testimony process. And when we do go back on the floor, we will recess this committee, and then we will come back after the floor session and pick up where we left off. I would imagine the floor session may take an hour. Yeah. And do I have any, is Senate Finance finished for the day? So it would be my intent to come back and pick up where we left off and deal with the bills. So with that, I will go ahead and start the public testimony, and then we can come back to in adopting the work draft with the pencils and changes, did you take care of your suggested amendments that would take care of some of the public concerns?
I just went through those, Senator Miller, and I believe those accurately reflect the changes.
Okay, so in other words, we have taken care of those two concerns.
That's correct.
Thank you. So with that, we will go to Nome. Senator Zaroff.
Do the sites that are online have a copy of this work draft?
Yes, it has been faxed to them.
It has been faxed, okay. Senator Kurtula is with us, too.
Yes. Senator Kurtula is also at the table, too. I missed him with the Michigan hat there.
Don't like your lights.
With that, we will go to Nome.